Caroline Caribou by Amy Mason. I can't tell you where I was born, or any of that kind of stuff, so I might as well start here, round the corner from my house with a small blue plaque. Princess Caribou, real name Mary Wilcox, 1791 to 1864, arrived in Almondsbury on April the 3rd, 1817, and successfully passed herself off as Princess Caribou from Javasu, a non-existent island, from which she claimed to have been kidnapped by pirates. Exposed 10 weeks later, Mary emigrated to America, returning to London in 1824 and subsequently Bedminster, where she became a leech dealer. From 1851 until the end of her life, she lived here, at 11 Princess Street. There's no room to say she had a baby who died. That's where she went a bit nuts. There's no room for the words she made up for things. Mono for morning, Anna for night, Appa for fire, Savvy for rain. There's no room to say how pretty she was, or the fancy kind of clothes she wore. There's no room for anything, really. But I'm glad it's up there all the same. From the plaque, I walk. Past New Queen Street and round the corner into White House Street. As always, I drop my shoulders and raise my chin. I try to think like Caribou, about what I'll have for supper or my latest leech deal. And I try to ignore all the new square buildings and only see things that she would have seen. The sky, a tree, some swooping birds. I do this walk a lot, when I need to be alone, which is most of the time these days. The thing about having been found is that people talk crap, especially kids at school. They'll say, I reckon your real mum like lost her memory or something and just put you down and forgot about you, which is kind but extremely unlikely. Or someone might say, maybe you don't even have a mum, maybe you just came down from space or something, which is obviously ridiculous. And then there's always someone with, I think she just took one look at you and chucked you away, you little freak. Even your personality doesn't feel like your own, or your looks. Am I short because my real dad was short, or because mum, my adopted one I mean, has fed me so many pulses and zero meat? And am I doing well at school because my mum was a brain box, or because my adopted dad's read me so many books? It makes me feel a bit mad, all these questions, floating in space with their answers floating too somewhere else, detached, alone, lost. So I started looking around, finding stuff out. And where better to start than my name? Caroline. Caroline. Which it turns out is actually not my name at all. Miss Quinn was the best teacher I've ever had. She had a big grey bun on top of her head like a cottage loaf and she'd tell us stories instead of teaching us stuff. They'd be cool stories too, about murderers or pirates, and we'd all egg her on until the bell would go and she'd get all red in the face and shout, homework, pages 8, 9 and 10 of book 2. Pages 8, 9 and 10 were what we were meant to have done in the lesson. I was 8 when she started telling us about a girl called Princess Caribou. It was meant to be a science class, I think. The name made my hand shoot up, like when someone hits you under your kneecap and you can't help but kick. I'd heard that name before, I knew it. Yes, Caroline, she asked, and I opened my mouth, but nothing came out. Do you want to go to the toilet, she asked. And I said, Princess, need the loo. What I wanted to say was, I have something to do with Princess Caribou. I know her name, though I'm not sure how. I've seen her name on a note, I think, in a box in my mum's room. But something made me keep quiet. When I went home, I asked my mum who Princess Caribou was. She smiled but looked like she was going to cry, and when Dad came home she said, Caroline wants to look in her memory box, Ian, in a quavery voice, and he looked all flustered and weird. My parents walk around naked and stuff, they talk about feelings and chant. I mean, I really wish they were less open. And ever since I was little there's been a memory box in their room, a memory box for me. But I'd never realised what it meant before, never shown any interest really in where I came from or who I was. These were the things I found. My birth certificate, mother, blank, father, blank, my adoption certificate, a pink knitted hat, and a note. Baby Caribou, God bless her and save her. So not Caroline at all, but Caribou. It was written on a piece of paper torn from a notebook, lined with holes at the top. The writing was all weird and scratchy and not even joined up. It was like Robert Greene's writing from school, who picked his nose and couldn't count. I couldn't believe that my real mother had writing like him. Mum said it was a good note, and that even though my biological mother was not in her right mind, she had obviously left me on the steps of a church with just a note and a funny pink hat for a reason. She believed in God. My dad, who is a scientist and does not like religion much at all, didn't seem so sure. She obviously had a lot of problems, is all he'd say. For my 12th birthday, my parents gave me a book. I could smell it was old even through the peach wrapping paper, and when I opened it, it looked so precious that I felt scared I was going to drop it or lose it, even before I'd properly seen what it was. On the cover, in gold letters, it said, "Caribou, a narrative of a singular imposition practiced upon the benevolence of a lady residing in the vicinity of the city of Bristol by a young woman of the name of Mary Wilcox, alias Baker, alias Baconstart, alias Caribou, Princess of Java Sioux." I spent my birthday money on a safe where I kept the book and read it every single night. The language was hard going at first, but nothing could stop me wanting to learn. The book had been written in 1817, the same year Caribou pulled her big trick. I started doing things like Caribou did. I could only hold the book with clean hands and after I'd eaten my supper. One night I even slept on the floor. The more I learnt, the more rules I developed. Instead of English numbers, I'd count in the ones Caribou used. Eze, do you say truer? And each night, as well as saying a prayer to Jesus, I'd say hi to her god, Allah Tala, too. I knew she wasn't my mum, of course, or my grandma or my aunt. I mean, there were hundreds of years between me and her. But something made me wonder why my real mum, who could hardly write, had chosen that weird name for her little baby girl she'd left on the steps of the church. For my 13th birthday, we went to look at her at Bristol City Museum. The painting, that is, by Edward Bird. By this point, Mum was Caribou sick, but made an exception as a birthday treat. There Caribou stood in her headdress with feathers, looking spectacular in her gold robes against an exotic backdrop of palm trees and sand. Mum held my hand tight as we looked and I talked and talked, wondering whether I possibly shared her nose, whether maybe, after all, she was my long-lost great-gran. Mum got in a mood after this. She pretends she doesn't mind, but I don't think she likes me being interested in things. I don't mean in cars or books or the stars. I mean my beginnings. Because she wishes I was tall like her, with thin, straight hair instead of curly and thick. She wishes I was really hers. For a while, I got obsessed with going back in time. I asked my dad so many questions about time travel, he was delighted, thought I wanted to do science like him. He soon got a suss though when he realised my questions were more back to the future based than actual real science based. I'd ask stuff like, if you went back and just jumped out on someone when they were about to do something, like leave something somewhere, could you stop them by just telling them not to? Or, could you go back like hundreds of years and maybe turn up on someone's doorstep, speaking a strange language perhaps? He always answered me properly, however silly the question. That's why I love him, I suppose. He told me this, got me to memorise it by heart for a £2 coin. Stated simply, the Novikov consistency principle asserts that if an event exists that would give rise to a paradox or to any change to the past whatsoever, then the probability of that event is zero. In short, it says it's impossible to create time paradoxes. I still don't quite get it, but what I think it means is you can't change the past. Except he then said that a time traveller could rescue people from a disaster and replace them with realistic corpses seconds before it occurs. I tried to get my head round this. Like, if I went back 14 years ago and put a doll in my place, would I still carry on living with my weird mad mum with her bad handwriting? Would mum and dad bring up a doll? Or if I wanted to help her out, I could go all the way back and save Caribou's baby. But then would she still go mad and pretend to be a princess? What on earth would her name be then? Last year, in The Guardian, there was a piece about a baby boy. Miracle Baby, they called him. He'd been left on some steps outside a hospital for 3 whole hours in the freezing cold and still survived. It was only then I thought of it. was I in the papers? Why didn't you keep them? I asked Mum and Dad. Mum explained that she hadn't known about me then, that she and Dad had only got me when I was 4 months old. But she said she could help me look. This is what we found. I felt a bit odd when we found it, first of all, and Mum put her hand over mine as I read it out loud in the library. Newborn baby caribou abandoned outside church. Children discovered a newborn baby abandoned in a carrier bag outside a church as they left for school today. That was me. The baby was found outside the Hebron Spiritualist Church in Hebron Road, South Bristol, just before 8:30 a.m. Police urgently want to trace the little girl's mother. A police spokesman said that the baby was taken to Bristol Royal Infirmary for checks and is in good health. He said, "The baby girl was wrapped in a carrier bag and was wearing a pink knitted hat. Underneath the child there was a note which named her as Baby Caribou. This is likely to be a reference to the so-called Princess Caribou, who is said to have lived in Bedminster." The man sitting next to me cleared his throat loudly and I stopped reading and turned towards him. "She's buried there, isn't she, that Princess Caribou?" he said. It was though the library had been full of invisible dominoes and those words started them falling, all round the room, through children's and biography, round travel and past tapes and CDs, flip, 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 till the last one, a big one, landed right on my head. "How do you know that?" I asked him, trying to stop my voice from shaking. "Everyone knows that," he said. But everyone didn't know that. There was nothing in my book, but then I suppose she was still alive when it was written. And there's nothing in the churchyard itself to say she's there, not even a little stone cross. But my mother knew it. My real mother, that is. For a while I was annoyed. Just more questions and some answers that didn't fit together at all, floating silently over Bedminster like big, weird clouds. I tried to find her grave, but there was no way in hell. 1,200 people were buried in there. How they fitted them in, God only knows. I got a bit down, to be honest. I wasn't close to working out who my mother was or why I was short or bright. And it made it easier to understand, more boring somehow, that a local girl with local knowledge would name her baby after some local celeb. That's when I started doing my walk. Down Princess Street and White House Street, all the way down East Street, I think and think till my brain hurt from imagining. I think about Caribou's poor dead body being brought down here from her house in a carriage. I'd imagine all the people doffing their caps as she passed, or whatever they used to do. I'd think about them all in black, crying, about her children and her friends mourning the girl, Mary, who, because of her stories, had got to see people and places they'd never see. I wondered what the hospital did for leeches after that. And then I'd think about someone else, the girl I didn't know at all. She must have lived near here too. Had she hid me as I'd grown inside her with jumpers from a shop round here? Had she been really young, my age perhaps? How had it happened? She'd loved me. Did she still live near? Every curly head I passed got a second glance till I was dizzy from looking. Mum started to worry about me being out all the time. She thought I was smoking sneaky fags or meeting up with boys. As if. At night I'd read my old book for signs, closing my eyes and opening it and pointing to a line. Until one day I found this. "Art thou sprung from the moon, or from far Java's Sioux, or a mermaid just landed, thou bright caribou?" It had been printed in the Bristol Mirror in 1817, just after Caribou got found out, sent in by some reader, I think. The weird thing is, people do sound bright. Teachers and stuff, not just Mum and Dad. Bright caribou, that could be me. And Thomas Dean had suggested I'd fallen from the moon. I'd take that too. I learnt the lines and repeated them so often under my breath that Claire Ryan asked to be moved from the seat next to me in maths. After a while I felt a bit better, like everything was lining up. One sunny afternoon, after a really bad day at school, I came to the church. I stood across the road and squinted so hard I felt sick. And what happened was this. First, the tips of my fingers and nose went cold. Then, from blue, the sky turned to pale grey and peach, and the light was sucked out of the stained glass till it was matte and almost black. There was the sound of hooves behind me and some faraway sobs on the breeze, and from the corner of my eye I noticed a dark shape, a man in the churchyard, digging a hole under a tree. From God knows where came a gust of wind, and in a split second the hedge in front of the church was ripped up by its roots and spiralled into the sky. The plastic word saying Hebron House flew from the facade and smashed to dust on the steps below. I had no time to be surprised, because someone I seemed to know with thick, dark, curly hair was hurrying down the path in front of me, shielding her face with her hand. As she passed, I caught a glimpse of a puffy eye, heard a mumbled prayer, then a cry. On the steps in front of the huge wooden door was a small white plastic parcel with a pink knitted end. It was making a noise. And all the time the hooves were getting louder and the sobs were getting nearer, and then a child shout, "Ma, look what we found, a baby, a real one, quick!" Then sirens, footsteps and prayers near the trees, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. With a flash the light came back, and so did the hedge and the plastic words and the sound of cars and kids kicking stones. I realised that maybe I'd had a chance, that I could have run and put my school bag down in the baby's place. I could have handed the baby, me, to the crying girl and told her things would be okay. But I hadn't. I hadn't wanted to. Because unlike Mary Wilcox, I don't have to make things up. I was found on some steps. No one knows where I'm from. My real name's Caribou. I repeated those words again and again as I walked back, smiling, along Hebron Road, then East Street, towards my home.